Hello, and welcome to our third story from Christchurch Community. I'm sitting here with Robin, who's been a member at Christchurch for how long?
I think 25 or 26 years.
25 or 26 years. We're sitting down on a lovely fall day, October 22nd, 2018. I'm Erin, and I am serving as a seminary in resident intern person who's learning about what it means to pastor a church. And so I just wanted to sit down and talk to you first, kind of I'm curious about what brought people to Christchurch initially, and kind of as the church has evolved, what's kept you at Christchurch? So what has been, what brought you, whether it was like, my friend was like,
my neighbor did.
It was close.
My neighbor did. The lady across the street was 85, and she'd gone there for some time, and she knew I was church shopping. I'm married to a Catholic, and we were unsure about how to raise our children at the time, so I had been church shopping. And she said, come to my church, and I had a son who had just recently been diagnosed, and I wasn't sure where he would fit in. Mm-hmm. So when we brought him to Christ Church, he crawled on the floor amongst this old guard of women that I just adored and touched all their pantyhose. And one of the women reached down and said, he's just fine. Mm-hmm. And that's all it took. I just needed to know that he would be accepted. And when I got there okay, this old guard of church ladies, mm-hmm. then it was okay to stay. I've been there ever since.
Oh, wow. So it was that comfort of knowing my son can be his full self.
Yes, and he wasn't relegated to some other. I think people could tell right away that there was an issue, but everybody let him be. And so then I felt relaxed, and I felt like I could give. But I was always so worried about where I could take him. I wasn't sure I would be able to give anything if I was always worried about how he was behaving. And I just didn't worry about it there.
And how did that carry through and shape for the rest of your time there as you went as a family to church?
Well,
a process, like an adaptation, or was it like...
Yeah.
Pretty organic.
Looking back on that, I was still very busy. I had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I was working, and I hadn't started back to school yet, but I felt really busy, and he was an active child, a really active child. We had a lot of appointments, a lot of doctor appointments, a lot of psychotherapy appointments, a lot of special school. But I knew that when I did go to church, I wanted to be involved in the church. Mm. But I couldn't do it for a lot of years. So for a lot of years, I just attended. I didn't really get busy until about... I didn't really get busy until about 15 years ago. Mm. So I think the first 10 years, I just attended, and sporadically at that. There would be weeks where I didn't go, and then we would go for 2 solid years and not miss. It kind of just depended on what was going on with the kids.
Right.
So I think now when I see young families there and we have the kids in the back, I love to hear their voices. I love to hear when they're part of the church, when they're not relegated to a classroom. It really means something to me how the kids are doing and they're integrated into the philosophy of the church, not just sitting at the front of the church for children's hour, that they really know how important they are. I know that Anne Lamott is somebody I really admire, mm-hmm. and when she was going to church and the older ladies would give her coins when she was recovering, and they would give one, there was one lady who used to give her a bag of coins, and how much that meant to her just to come, and by that point Anne was doing okay, and this lady always gave her a little sack of quarters to do her laundry. Aww. And she's still in that church, and it's still a really small church in Sausalito, I think, and it just feels that way to me. It feels like a church who knows what they're doing and where they're going, even though we've been, you know, shifting. We became open and affirming while I was there. So to me, my family has replicated, or the church has replicated my family. There was this turmoil that we were trying to figure out what to do, a real peace about what we needed to know what to do, real prayer about. So my family and the church seem one and the same, I guess I'm saying. So now it's like, I think the world is hard right now. It's difficult. And I think my son is having a hard time in the world trying to find his place. Mm-hmm. But there's a real calmness about that too, about an acceptance about what I really can work to change and what I can't. So I guess I'm saying that badly, but
no.
Taking my hands off my son at this stage of his life with his diagnosis, and what I really can attend to.
Mm.
I think in the mental health field we call it cautious dependence.
So
we're not really working for him to be independent, because I don't know that he can, and I don't know that our church needs us to be independent of it. It needs us to be in it and in its life's blood.
Mm.
But what is that relationship with the church all the time?
Mm.
It doesn't feel like a separate entity, I guess I'm going to say. It just feels like the same thing. It feels like me.
Right. Yeah, and there's been so much research about children leaving the church and why that is. And a lot of it is that children, from the very beginning, their introduction to church is that they leave.
Right.
When the real stuff, quote unquote, happens in the church. And then they go off and... So having children in the service, yeah, it's... You just, like, touched on something that is very, very true. Yeah. What about the community in terms of, like, supporting your family? Like, how important was it that Christ Church was... Did you feel really supported by the community while you were going through everything?
Yeah, even though, you know, I don't know that I talked about it much when I was there, and I don't know at the time, you know, the world wasn't very attuned to what special needs children really were at that time. And I think the struggle was so fatiguing that when I got to church, I wasn't my... most giving best self. I was mostly just exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Honestly. And there was one lady who recently passed away, Catherine, and she would always come up to me after church or sometimes during church, and she'd say, "How's Miles?" And she would tip her head to the left, and she was perky. And I would say good and whatever he was doing. And then she'd turn her head to the right, and in a lower tone, she'd go, "How's Ben?" And just the fact that she asked me how he was always made me cry. Still makes me cry. Because I knew she didn't really get autism. I knew she didn't get a lot of the terminology we're talking about. But she would, her caring, I always said she smelled like Ajax and calla lilies. Just that action that she gave to the church. She was the Sunday school teacher forever. And she would just always ask about how he was doing. And it just made all the difference in the world. So now that I'm an old church lady... I'm not sure that I'm as attuned to the kids as I want to be, but I think I'm better with their parents.
Because of your own experiences.
Yeah. And I hear them saying, "I'm sorry they made noise," or "they're I'll put this away," and I'm just so, oh my gosh, their energy there and wanting them to feel so included. Not even included, because that sounds like we have ownership and we're inviting you to it. That it's that they're so integrated into the church itself. And I think that is... what so many churches do badly, and I'm not sure we have a handle on that, but I think that we're doing a better job. I think it's so important to go and hug the kids. There's a little girl in the back named Maggie that I think is just a darling girl, and every Sunday, you know, she gives me a good long hug, and I just feel like I'm not sure it's helping her, but it's helping me. But I adore that kid, and I don't know much about her day-to-day life. I just know I look forward to seeing her. It meant so much to me.
Do you have any hopes or visions or dreams for the church and children and where you hope to go, or not even just with children, but just...
Sure. It's not that I think they should be a church. I think what our church offers specifically, I guess, is a moral imperative, I guess. It's not... God, that sounds so wordy.
No.
To me, the political conversations are political conversations. They're what we're asked to do. It's not something you can not attend. We can't not attend to vote. We can't not attend to stem cell therapy. We can't not attend to the mental health crises in the country. We can't not attend to the sanctuary movement or immigrants. We can't not attend. And my hope for the kids, my hope for this generation that's coming up, is that they hear this so often and they're so much a part of it, that they never have to say, "Well, I'm not going to have that political conversation." It's just who they are. So I guess that's my goal for the kids. You know, to see our kids come out in confirmation class, to see them move forward in what they think and what they believe, and the church be a vehicle that they can start those thoughts in that process. Instead of somewhere else and then maybe dancing around it in church. To me, they're finding it in church and they're taking it out into the community and making moves that way. And when I was young, it wasn't that case. We maybe talked about some things that were hard at church, but for the most part, we were just reminded to be good. And then our job was to be good to other people, and usually people like us. So I don't think we're doing that as a church. I think that they're really getting that everybody is truly welcome, and you start from there and go out instead of the other way around.
Right.
That was profoundly different for me in my own church experience and what I think our young people are seeing now. I hope.
No, you definitely can sense the difference. What I'm curious about is, because you've been with the church, you said, for 25 years?
Something like that. A while.
Because 25 years ago, I mean, us even having this conversation would have been radical. Even in the most, like, the UCC denomination is known for being, in general, really progressive. But having this conversation, I mean, I guess I'm interested in what, because that is not happening with my generation. I'm 32. And so what's happening is that people kind of come in and out. They don't feel this rootedness and this commitment to stay in a community. And like you said, you had your own times where you were not there because of things going on in your life. But I guess what has kept you going back, and maybe during times of conflict, what kind of, what can we learn from a group of people, because you're not the only one who's been in a community for that long and has weathered the storms.
I think I could answer that in one word, the sermon.
Sermon.
Mm-hmm. So while I probably am attached to very many things that I do or issues that we have at the church, the sermon, the 15 minutes of or an hour of ritual, and that you can change, and it has changed over time. But the sermon where I'm just sitting still for 15 or 20 minutes, listening to real theology, and I think that's what's missing in so many other denominations, or it feels to me that there's no real creed. But in our church, there seems to be. And the message is the same, but just given over and over in different ways. I constantly challenge myself with patience. The other day, the sermon was on cheerful giving, and that was just the sermon I needed to hear, because I think I was whining about something I felt I had to do or give. And it just always seems to be so timely. But I think in this world of constant news now, years ago, that wasn't the case when I started the church. But the sermon always has mattered to me. It still matters to me. It matters what my pastor says. It matters how educated my pastor is. It matters. We've had pastors who weren't very, and it mattered. I would sit not even in the church. I would go sit in the socks room or downstairs and have coffee, because it was so offensive.
Yes.
But we've been very fortunate in this particular church to have educated people, both, I think, through Eden and other churches, but it matters to me that we have people like you who are coming through the church system, and I want to make sure that you get the education that you need in all ways, not just in the classroom, but through the community like you're doing. And I think that makes a difference on what happens years later from the pulpit. Look at our pastor. I mean, she's had to really stand out there and say, the sanctuary movement is what's going to happen. And she kind of did that alone, basically. We all had to, it took us a while. It took us a while with Brian, our pastor at the time, to be open. At the time, I wasn't sure that was my issue. I was slow to come to that, I think. And now I can't imagine a world differently than that. But at the time, I was like, well, I'm a heterosexual woman with two kids, and this affects me how? It was how I thought. But if I hadn't been presented that in my church, if I hadn't, I could have easily gone on for a very long time. I hope I would have changed, but I would have gone on longer than had my church not challenged me in that direction. So I think that sermon makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, and you talk about change. It's also like transformation, which I think is so theological. Yeah. It can really only happen in a few spaces.
Yeah,
that kind of transformation. Do you remember a moment where you felt like you were transformed because of witnessing Alex and the sanctuary movement?
A bunch. When we went, I went to the Columbia conference this summer.
Church conference?
Yeah. Of UCC conference, John Dorhauer was speaking, and I wanted to hear him, and I just wanted to go, and people were standing up talking about what their churches were doing. Mm. And I didn't know I felt that way till I got the microphone in my hand. And I said, Alex has transformed our church, our congregation. And I've seen our church go through many transformations, both with getting women pastors, I think, are a long time ago to be open and affirming was still new at the time we were considering it. And then the work we did around that, diversity, I think we really concentrated and worked on diversity. Our Jesus classes that we took, I think, were really radical. But standing in that place, I didn't realize that Alex and understanding and meeting him and his wife and his children and knowing him changed in my head. And then eventually changed in my heart. But to see a person just struggling to live and had to work so hard to come to this country, and then what he's having to do to stay in this country deserves all of our attention as a nation, all our attention as a world. So I didn't realize that our church had been transformed until I was telling all these other people that our church had been transformed. And I always thought it was a pretty good church anyway. But this has galvanized us in a way that I think has an energy to it that will always stay with us. And people that I might not have thought who would have been interested in this movement or would have been easy to say, that's not me, it's not part of who I am, can't turn away.
That being in relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't know I felt that way until I was saying it. So we had the chance to articulate that, and I think that's what a lot of the transformation is on Sunday, is hearing it articulated, hearing any kind of change like that. You know, it's not a political conversation, it's what we're asked to do. And whether we step up to that challenge or not is always the issue.
Right.
We say in the mental health field, it's not that you had the thought, it's how long you stay with that dysfunctional thought that is how healthy or unhealthy you are. So we always want to never have that thought or get rid of that thought, and the reality is we probably always will. It's just how long we live there. And I think in the church it's the same thing. How long are we going to say this isn't our issue? How long do we ignore this because we put some kind of wall up that says this doesn't belong to me when everything belongs to us?
Yeah, and it really gets away, I think it gets at that, what I love so much about coming into Christ Church is that there's been already so much work around the difference between justice and charity.
Right.
Because to actually do justice, it is transformational and it is about relationship. And it's not just about the giving, it's about what happens to you as a person. So, yeah, it's been beautiful to witness that.
Well, just like what Christopher is doing this weekend, you know, trying to give out toiletry kits, and he came back, I think, transformed with, we might not be on the right track there. And this is what we need to do. And so I remember when I was in college, an organization I belonged to gave hams to all these people we thought were poor in the community where I lived in Missouri. And we didn't know until later that a lot of people, A, were homeless or didn't have ovens. And my naiveness or wanting to, that white people savior thing, you know, was really exceptionally loud as an 18-year-old girl. But that shocked me, even though I had been raised very poor myself, and I had never considered that and that opportunity to see that. So, you know, I think often that's been a big transformation for me, is to be able to see what is truly the work of the church, and everything is the answer.
Everything.
You can't have the conversation at Christ Church that says this doesn't belong to us, because it does. It all does.
In the few minutes we have remaining, you've just blessed me with so much richness. I'm just overwhelmed by the people that I sit down with, because I kind of go in thinking these are the questions I'm going to ask, but there's just so much richness in the stories that I'm hearing from Christ Church, and just, I don't think I've ever in my, you know, however many years, 12 now, I guess I've been trying out different churches and denominations. I have never come across a community that is this, invested. And it's almost like it's when something is so kind of like the Holy Spirit, like it's all around you, so you can't really name it. It's like, I find that people are like, well, what made you stay for 20-some years? And it's like, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Everything.
The sermon, but everything.
But everything.
And I would say in United Church of Christ overall, nationwide, maybe worldwide, I don't know. But it seems like there's a driven force which might be missing in some other congregation. It feels to me that they're all on the same page about what belongs to us. So there's an energy there that I think is different. I don't want to say special, but feels different.
Mm-hmm.
A movement. I think people are good. I think people are basically very, very good. And they really want to do things. And they really want to help. And they don't know where to put their energy. So I love knowing that during the last hurricane, our church was already there. The greater church was already there. So we don't have to rethink the wheel all the time. I love sitting next to somebody in a congregation who may be different background, different sexual orientation, different color skin, but we're on the same page about our hopes for what we want to see. But I wasn't raised like that. I only sat next to people who looked like me and were educated like me and thought like me. So I didn't know. So I still feel surprised all the time that this person or this man or woman, different age, different race, different sex, has the same thought process, and then we're trying to do the same thing. And that is so motivating.
That interconnectedness, that through line.
All the time. I love looking at the church on Sunday morning with all the kids up there, and it's just a color wheel. And histories and foster kids and immigrant children, and it's just amazing to me. Every Sunday, it's just more and more, all of God's world just is represented right there. And it's such a little congregation, that's kind of amazing.
And I guess that's what I really mean when I say unique, is that it's very difficult to access diversity without putting an umbrella of whiteness over it. Or saying, come to the church and be diverse, but by the way, here's all the 7,000 things you have to do to be the same as us. So it's really interesting to me to be in the living transformation that, and it's not that it is there, but it is becoming that, you know? And so it's been incredible. So kind of accessing that goodness, like, where would you like to see that goodness go? And somebody's listening to this, you know, 20 years from now or 10 years from now or however long from now, what would you hope the community, do you have like a single kind of hope or wish or, where would you hope that Christ's community is in 20 years?
Well, I guess I keep comparing it to my family, but I know years ago when I always used to have to picture, where do you see your child in 20 years? And everybody always wrote they just wanted their child happy, and I never, ever wrote that. I don't think that's the goal. They were supposed to be happy. Amen. I don't think we ever promised that. So I don't wish everybody to get along and be happy. I don't think that. And I think I'm supposed to.
Yes, amen.
I think people think I'm supposed to say that. I want us to attend. Our hope for the future is to attend to what, I don't know what the world's going to look like in 20 years. Hell, I don't know what's going to look like tomorrow. But to attend to what's in front of us. You know, attend to our earth. Attend to each other. Not just that we get along and are nice to each other or happy. That's so overrated. And as a therapist, it feels funny to say that, but I'm never hoping that my clients are happy. I'm hoping they can attend to whatever is in front of them. And I have the same goal for the church. I see the church growing. I know it's a little church, but I see overall United Church of Christ growing and our particular church growing, because I think there's a lot of things that we're doing right. And it's not because, again, it's a goal. I don't have a goal to want the church to grow. I think it would be great because I think it's a cool thing people want to belong to. But that's not on my bucket list of things I want done, that our church growing. I think people will naturally come because they're basically good and they want to use the energy that's been God-given to them and whoever they are. I love that one of the members of our church is a challenged man who always reminds us about what is good in the world. Every Sunday.
Yes, I do know.
Every Sunday reminds us what's good in the world and what we need to pay attention to.
Yes.
So I guess that is that we just attend to whatever's in front of us and that we attend it well.
So my final question before I let you kind of say anything that's still on your mind or heart is, Aretha Franklin was asked, she was being interviewed by somebody, and I think the interview wasn't going very well. And so she asked the interviewer, who was white, she said, like, what does your church smell like? And she was like, old books, and, you know, kind of like a dead image of, like, it doesn't draw anything. And she was like, my church smells like fried chicken and women sweating as they, like, it was a very visceral, alive image. And I think of Christ Church as being a church that is alive. I mean, you walk in, you smell all different kinds of things. So what does Christ Church to you smell like?
Well, that's a great question. I wrote a poem once about Christ Church when I first started there, and I talked about the linoleum. The linoleum under my feet, and it was always shiny and buffed. But now I wouldn't say that at all. You know, at that time, that felt like a foundation underneath me and that I needed at the time, like solid. I knew what to expect. And now it feels so much like that. I love coming in, and the smell is the kitchen. We can smell so much in the kitchen. And I love that it's not me doing it. It's all these food trucks. It's all these different ethnicities. It's in there. It's energy. I love that the hallway now smells like the kids because they're running in the church.
Sweating.
Yeah. And I still really like that Old Guard of Calla Lily and Ajax. I always smell that in the church. In the garden, when you walk past the food pantry, I mean, our community garden, to walk past all the herbs. I walked past a pepper and got it on my hands, and I ran into the kitchen because it was so hot. And I thought, how great, you know, to see the rainbow outside and the garden. I think that it smells like life. And sometimes life smells bad. And sometimes life just smells exquisite. So to me, it smells like life all the time. All its glue sticks from the Sunday school. And everything we do up on the altar. I think the piano and the organ have a particular smell. And when you open the hymnals now, it doesn't smell old because our music is new. You know, it's mimeographed.
Yes.
So I don't smell the choir robes anymore because we don't use them. So to me, there's new smells. When we open the windows, you know, outside, to me, churches that are dying smell cloistered, dusty. And this is just open. So it just smells like life.
Thank you. Is there anything that you want to say before we sign off?
Mary Oliver said, are you barely breathing and calling it a life? And I think that, you know, church can be a place where you're barely breathing. And our job as congregants is to make sure that that doesn't happen. I think if we truly have a future for the church, for ourselves, it has to have a life. It has to have a force. And sometimes it's going to make us uncomfortable, I think, what that force is. Or it's not who we thought we were. And we just have to be open to that.
Wow.
That's it. That's all I got.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Erin. Really, I'm delighted you're doing this.
Yeah, I wish we had two more hours.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is Erin and Robin signing off. Thank you for listening, and keep up with us on our StoryCorps page, Christ Church Community, and follow us for more stories to come. Thank you.
So if I want to listen to, Jan's story or Noah's,
You can go and listen.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's a page.